These things eat bamboo, but there's no nutritional value for them, and they have to eat too much of it because they their stomachs don't tolerate it, but they just keep eating it. So they're eating stuff that's not even good for them. They don't like to have sex, so they never reproduce. And then when they do, like, it's just a surprise. Every couple of months, it's like, she might be pregnant, or she might just have gained a little weight. And let's just hope that she doesn't roll over on it or eat it when it's born.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, here with another podcast about digital media and the people who make it. In the studio today with me is a friend and a colleague. Meredith Summers is a reporter here at Federal News Radio. I got to talking to her and I realized that she would be a great person to have on the podcast to talk about the work she does and sort of how she got to her current position as a reporter here. So welcome, Meredith.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for agreeing to be here. So now you've been here for about a year. And before that, you were a reporter at The Washington Times.
Yeah. So I worked for The Washington Times from 2011 to the fall of 2014. And then I did a quick stint with the AP. They have contractors who work during the legislative session because it gets so busy and all the standard reporters there need a little extra help around that time. But yeah, the longest job that I held before that was at the Washington Times.
Washington Times. Well, okay. Well, how did you get to the D.C. area? Now, you're originally from like Ohio?
Yep. I grew up in Ohio. I mean, originally from New York, but moved in, you know, spent my formative years in Ohio and went to school in Connecticut and then came home after college and was just kind of putzing around living with my parents, which is always really exciting and awesome. And I ended up, back then, that was when community news was community news. And so Columbus, Ohio has, you know, the city. And then similar to this area, there's, you know, suburbs and cities and smaller cities and villages and townships. And as it happened, the community newspaper that I would read that would get delivered to my house was looking for a reporter. And so I applied for the job and got it. And so I was covering, like, you know, my neighbors and stuff, which was kind of weird, but also kind of great. I mean, it wasn't just my neighbors. It was, you know, I knew where I was going. Like, I never got lost. I knew, you know, I was going down the street from my high school to listen to a city council meeting. And so I did that for about a year and a half and then was just getting kind of antsy at home because, again, Columbus, Ohio is a great place to grow up and come home to. But it's nice to spread my wings. And a couple of girlfriends from college were moving to the city here in D.C. And so I said, well, I'm coming too, and came here and got a job down in Southern Maryland. So I was doing the reverse commute down, working in Waldorf for the Maryland Independent. And so that was an interesting job. It was a step up from doing city council meetings. I was now covering county commission meetings for an area where 60% of the workforce left every morning to go to work in D.C. So you were dealing with a lot of very educated and well-off residents who were federal employees, but they would leave throughout the day. So we were really the ones having to do their job of telling them what is going on in the county because they didn't know. They were spending most of their days not at home.
Yeah, and that's important news to cover because that's where people live and that's
right.
The stuff
that's where
that
people live.
Them.
Yeah, and in Southern Maryland, you know, you've got proving ground and army base and naval stuff, Port Tobacco, but then you've got, you know, these beautiful wetlands and tributaries to the Chesapeake Bay. And then you've got these big, long expanses of undeveloped land that everybody wants. So it was really kind of interesting. You know, you'd be dealing, you know, you go to a commission meeting and you'd have these feds and these big black SUVs. And then you'd have just like the mom and pop store across the street, you know, who didn't want, you know, this big giant building, you know, coming in right next to them or in their backyard. But at the same time, they did need a lot of this. The county still needed to grow. So it was definitely an interesting dichotomy. So it was there for another year and a half and then got the job at the Washington Times.
So what were you doing primarily at the Washington Times?
At Washington Times, I was general assignment reporter. So every day was a little bit different. Some days it was, you know, what was the latest drama unfolding at the Panda House at the National Zoo. And sometimes for a while there, it was Occupy DC in McPherson Square. I covered the Democratic National Convention in 2012. And, you know, if there was a protest or, you know, if there was an unfortunate shooting or accident or metro incident, I would cover that. Every day was a little bit different, which was great. I really liked doing that.
Now, was that like AP stories for the D.C. area or were they just pretty much go everywhere?
For AP, it was mostly the D.C. area, depending on what the story was, because I was covering Maryland at the time. I did a couple of the Freddie Gray riot stories, which, you know, the whole country knew about, and a couple other stories. What's interesting about state government is that a lot of times that's really where the news is. That's where, you know, you get things like marijuana and whether or not it can be legal or not. You know, so sometimes my stories would end up national. Sometimes they would just end up along the East Coast. It just kind of depended on the topic.
So I know that you, well, for one, you mentioned the panda story. I know we were talking about that.
Right.
So that you had become sort of an expert in panda love.
Yeah, and in panda reproduction. It is the most complicated thing. Like, they don't just reproduce naturally. Don't even get me started on why I think there should be, you know, just let nature take its course. These things eat bamboo, but there's no nutritional value for them. And they have to eat too much of it because their stomachs don't tolerate it, but they just keep eating it. So they're eating stuff that's not even good for them. They don't like to have sex, so they never reproduce. And then when they do, like, it's just a surprise. Every couple of months, it's like, she might be pregnant or she might just have gained a little weight. And let's just hope that she doesn't roll over on it or eat it when it's born. So I was there for, I don't even remember, what is it, Bao Bao? Was that the most
recent
one?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and that was right after, it was like a year after there had been that miscarriage, or it wasn't a miscarriage, the baby had been born and lived for like a week and then it died. And it was very sad and it had like fluid in its lungs, and I can remember that kind of a detail, but can I tell you about, you know, some big policy? Of course not. So fluid in the lungs of this baby panda, and then a year later Bao Bao was born, and everybody lost, you know, their minds over it. It was pretty cute, I have to admit. But yeah, I was going to the zoo every couple of weeks, you know, or every couple of weeks, as they, you know, mom was starting to look a little pregnant. And then once she came, it was just like, oh god, you know, we've got a report on the panda cub and how many people are here to show up. When they brought the panda out for the first time for the public to see, because then they shut the place down so that the mom and the baby can bond and do their thing, it was like the Beatles had arrived. Like, this panda was so, like, people were outside waiting to get into this panda house, like, at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's insane.
It's insane. So, and then, so from pandas, you covered the Democratic National Convention. What was that experience like?
That was actually really cool. I got to see the Foo Fighters play, which was awesome. But, like, you will appreciate
this. And some political stuff.
And some political stuff, too. So I was sent down because it was right around the time that Occupy DC had started to peter out, but it was still getting some attention. And Vince Gray, the mayor at the time in D.C., was going down to support the president in his nomination. And there was rumors that Occupy D.C. would also come down. So my editor said, go on out. You can go too, and just kind of pick up any other stories you can find. So I went down and they did show up. Occupy D.C. showed up and they shut down an intersection. And I believe they made Vince Gray late for his speaking engagement or something. You know, they just go and they stand out in the middle of the intersection and they don't really do any harm to anybody. They just stand there and make it inconvenient for anybody to get around. So I covered that story. And then I got to do a little bit of man on the street, sort of, hey, how are you feeling about, you know, the president running again? And then if you had protesters, just in general, political protesters, what do you think there? It was really interesting. It's kind of, I was in Charlotte at the time, and Charlotte's just a very vertical city. And so each day, we all got there on a Monday, and the president was speaking on Thursday. And every day we'd go back into the city because our hotel was outside, and there'd be like another ring of security. It was almost like an apocalyptic zombie movie because the streets started to empty out because there's only so many steps and security, you know, checks you could go through before, like, you were only allowed in if you had the credentials. So by the end, it was just like a no man's land. And then as soon as the president leaves, it's like, oh, whatever, you can open up again. But it was neat. You know, you got to see a lot of movers and shakers and just to get to see kind of behind the scenes of what we all watch on TV. And it was neat.
So let's contrast that to what your current job is, which is at Federal News Radio. How would you describe the types of stories that you cover now?
Not panda reproduction.
Well, you know, panda technically, I believe, is a federal employee.
That's true. It well, with the sequestration, those guys are, they're put on hold for a while, too.
Somebody's got to go down there to feed the panda.
Someone's got to go down. Yeah, just what do they call it? Essential staff.
To throw some bamboo over the fence.
So the stories that I do now, kind of, it's interesting that I started in city council township stuff where, like, there would be 3-hour arguments over what color the CVS sign should be because it's a historical district. I'm not kidding you.
I'm familiar with those kind of stories.
And then it went to county commission where it was, well, should we just tear down this perfectly pristine stream so we can put in, you know, another big box store? And then it was, you know, state government in Maryland where it was, okay, this is where you're starting to get national attention for stories. And now it's like, okay, when there's something that happens that I'm covering, people are going to read about it nationally because Federal News Radio, we cover federal employees. And that's not just within the Beltway, that's across the country and then overseas too. And now it's, I mean, I remember when I applied for this job and I was like, okay, I guess I can probably find something interesting about it. But, and I will say sometimes, you know, I'm like, okay, here's another acquisition I need to write about, or, you know, a pay scale thing. But then there are really interesting stories that affect not only federal employees, but like the whole country. You get stuff like, you know, oversight of National Park Service, where we've all been to a national park and we want to know that people are being treated fairly and appropriately. Or you get, you know, cybersecurity incidents like OPM and its data breaches. Like, everybody gets a new credit card every couple of months because somebody's taken their, you know, their credit card. And so it's, you realize how much more connected we all are through the government and the policies and programs and decisions that are made. And so it's interesting. When I started out as a reporter, and I still do try to like write about, you know, okay, if I was explaining this to my mom, how would I do it? And my mom's a very intelligent person, but she's not totally involved in everything. And I find it much easier than I thought it would be to be like, okay, here's how this applies to our audience. But if you're just an average Joe reading the story, this is also how it applies to you. And there's much more of that than I thought there would be.
Yeah, I would say, you know, when they bring you into this job, they push very much that, oh, this is really kind of wonky and it's very dry and, you know, there are only certain types of people. But there are stories in here. And you know, occasionally it is a bit of a challenge to try to figure out how to humanize something.
Yeah.
But once you do, and once you realize the impact, you know, but that can be challenging day in and day out.
Well, I don't normally cover DOD, and I had to do it last week. And I had to cover a story about
Department of Defense.
Yes, sorry. And I had to cover what they're doing is literally taking stacks of like servers, like email servers, like we've all heard about from the FBI, and trying to knock down all to a smaller amount the infrastructure that the Department of Defense has. And there's so many acronyms and there's so many like, okay, let's take one step. Okay, let's take another step. And it's just so slow. And you're like, who cares? But then you think, okay, if we went to war or that we got attacked or something, or some, you know, our family loved ones who were overseas got attacked because they're fighting or doing something, you would want to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And the Defense Department isn't always like that. And so I'm writing this story and I'm like, okay, this has taken a little bit of effort, more than I normally would need to, you know, do this. But then you think, oh, right, this does really apply. This is interesting. This does impact much more than just, you know, the audience that I know is reading this.
So it's interesting the way you're talking. For you, you're sort of entree into a story is the relatability, seeing what the value in something is.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, there's so many different outlets out there reporting on the same thing, especially in Washington. I mean, you're hardly ever going to be at an event where it's just you. And if you are, it's probably because there was bad traffic and the other person isn't there. And so you have to figure out a way to write it in a way that's either different. And I find to make it different, I find it's easier for me to write it as more relatable. And that generally makes it easier for me to write the lead and then kind of fill it in with, oh, okay, well, this is how I would relate to it. And okay, let me explain it. I Tarantino it. Here's the idea, and then I work my way back and then up again.
Yeah, your stories are all told out of sequence.
Yes, exactly.
And with lots of violence.
Really good music and bloody violence scenes, yes.
Yes, that's exactly right. No, it can be a challenge to do this type of reporting where it's, you know, our business model is to try to go after, you know, federal managers. But, you know, a lot of our audience are just the, you know, regular civil servant who goes in. But then we also have an audience that just have a general interest in government. So you can't be too dry. You can't be too wonky.
Yeah.
You have to write something that and also identify what the importance is. I always found that because I don't do as much writing as you do. I still do some writing here. But I always found that you know, figuring out pretty quickly what is the thing that's either different or new or that you just want to tell somebody. This is what you need to know. And just once you identify that, then you can write the story from that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what our editor, Jason, suggests doing. It's why people care. What is important to our readers about this? And that can be challenging because a lot of times in this line of work for Federal News Radio, like you're writing to people who probably do know more than you, or at least they're up to date like with you are. Not everybody knows about panda reproduction. So I'm able to tell somebody something that they don't already know. And it can be a little bit more tricky to be like, okay, this is why it's important, or this is how you can relate to it. And even if you just lead with that and then kind of go into that, okay, let's get a little bit more specific and not drier, but more bureaucratic, higher level. But it's just like, to capture that attention, you've got to be in that first lead or two or sentence or two. This is why it's interesting. This is why it relates to you. And this is why you should keep reading.
Yeah. And at the other side of it is, you know, people, when we, you know, I always tell people when I explain to them where I work, we cover the federal government, we cover the bureaucracy, but from a non-political point of view, mm-hmm. which is good and bad in many ways. It's good in the sense that we don't really have a dog in this fight. Mm-hmm. It's what we're there is to sort of to break down the facts of what the story is, not taking one particular political side or not. The downside of it is that there are a lot of stories that come up that are political in nature that affect what we do, but we don't necessarily cover them mm-hmm. the same way. I mean, like, for example, the president rolls out his budget. We're really kind of more concerned, you know, not with some of the more political aspects of what the budget's about, but about the actual, oh, they're going to increase funding at this place and this, and they're going to hire this many more managers here and there. So it's a slightly different way of covering the government.
Yeah. Like I love writing features. I love, you know, people stories, that kind of thing. And when you mentioned the budget, I remember when the president had announced there was that cancer moonshot.
Yeah.
And which sounds like so cool because there's so many amazing stories when it comes to that kind of a thing. You know, I mean, they're heartbreaking stories when you hear about someone's going through cancer, but also these like also ugly cry stories when you found out that someone has, you know, been cured. And so the fact that they were doing this, you know, huge effort to, you know, really expand science and research and technology and improve lives. I was like, yes, I totally want to do this. And at the Times or at AP, that's what I would have done. It would have been like, here's the story. Here's, you know, let me talk to Joe Biden. Let me talk to this person. It's going to be this big, fuzzy, amazing people story. And then I had to go, okay, wait, but how does this apply to Federal News Radio? And it was more like, okay, well, how, you know, who's going to be a part of this within the government? Are agencies going to be working together? How is this going to get done? And then I found out, oh, okay, well, they are linking up thanks to, you know, big data, which is a big topic for us. You know, they're hooking up patients who wouldn't normally know about a, you know, a new clinical trial because it's really, you know, it's either too small to make national news or it's too, you know, risky or you know, edgy to maybe not everybody wants to talk about it. And so you're able to put in your data and it's able to link up trials with patients that you wouldn't normally. And that's an interesting topic. And it does feed into that larger, you know, amazing feature profile story. But we look at it from our federal news angle.
So is there anything that you've like suddenly become an expert on that you never thought that you would be an expert on?
I'm an expert at everything now.
Oh, I forgot who I was talking to.
No, that's a good question. I feel like sometimes depending on what my beat is, like I will become an expert in, like I could tell you all about open season, at least last year when we did that story.
Oh my God.
Yeah, remember that?
Yeah, we did something incredibly wonderful, but incredibly
A for effort.
F for C minus for execution.
Yeah,
I think it might actually have been my bright idea.
It was
my bright idea. Open season is when federal employees for a couple of months at the end of the year they can go in and change their health insurance mm-hmm. plan. And last year was actually kind of a big one that there was some new.
There was like they just changed something or added something.
Yeah.
So
that's how big an impact it is we remember exactly what it was. But
Mike had the idea.
The water.
And to be fair, I was totally. It sounds like a great idea on paper.
Yeah, because I'm always looking for ways for the web team to sort of engage with the audience. And it was like, well, why don't we do a survey? People can submit their questions and we could provide we provide answers.
Because they have a book. It's like an actual book and it's almost like a choose your own adventure. If you have this and you want to do this, here's some suggestions you could take. It has like premiums and like breaks down, you know, if you have this existing condition or you want this, it really breaks it down. So we were thinking, okay, we'll just answer questions.
Yeah. And what we discovered was that there are people who actually have whole careers and jobs where that's all they do is they answer those questions.
Yes.
And we got over 100 questions.
100. I mean, I spent one holiday just answering questions. It was Thanksgiving. I think I just answered questions.
Yeah. No, it was definitely a learning experience. I think we probably ended up learning a lot more about open season.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how successful it was in the end. Mm-hmm. I think Because you can only get, because it's sort of, the real lesson in it is when you do something like that, you realize that you're dealing with people who may be asking you, quote unquote, life and death questions.
No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah,
is what it was.
I need to know whether I should change my health plan so that my wife who's receives
on, like,
it,
life support.
Yeah, yeah, is going to be able to get this. And so, like, you know, so do you take on that responsibility of, oh, okay, yeah, well, I better figure out exactly the right answer, yeah, or steer them in the right direction.
Yeah.
So that I don't, like, negatively impact their lives,
yeah, no,
by
that's
giving
what
them
was
bad
happening.
Bad information.
You would get some people, and it was a very easy, okay, yeah, go to this page, or yes, here are your options, or no, this hasn't changed. But yeah, you would get people who go, I have an adult, you know, son who's living with me and he's physically incapable of doing this. What should I do? Or I, you know, have a wife who's going through cancer treatment. I need this. And it, if anything, it pointed out that these HR offices at agencies were not doing enough, because
right,
there were so many questions that they were asking us that weren't just easy, you know, oh yeah, just go Google this and there's your form. It was like hyper specific personal questions that.
Yeah. I think from a production standpoint, mm-hmm, I think from our perspective, it was like, okay, well, we learned something from,
yeah,
how we would do a project like that in the future. And I think we did our best, the mm-hmm best that we could do in the situation. I think
there
we
were
did
definitely
help
a couple
people
who were like, thank you so much, that's all I needed. And that,
yeah,
was it. But
so we, yeah, think twice about maybe how, yeah, we would do that again in the future.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily it was a bad idea, but just maybe think about the consequences and the execution, mm-hmm, and how you're going to support that.
Yes.
Making sure that we had enough.
Well, for that month, though, I was like dreaming, like
open season
and different plans. Yeah.
Before we wrap up here, I did want to ask you said that you'd covered Occupy DC. I always, mm-hmm, found that a really interesting story. Tell me about your experience doing that.
My gosh, that was quite an experience. I remember the day going out there, and it was like, I think the day after they'd had their first meeting, because they met on a Sunday and I went out there on a Monday, and I went out to McPherson Square, and it was just like two park benches, and one, they just had like a box of food that people had donated. It was like, you know, bagels and a couple waters, and that was it. And I was just thinking to myself, all right, well, this is going to be over in like 2 days. Flash forward to like a month later, where they've built a giant fort and there's people getting, you know, trampled by horses, you know, park horses, and they've got, you know, riot police got gear out there. And then a month after that, when they've got, like, it looks like hazmat guys out there lifting up these pallets where people have been sleeping, and rats, like dozens of rats scattering. Like it, I don't know, maybe I have a terrible news judgment, but I thought it was going to be done, over and done within a week. And it went on for how long? It was like 4 or 5 months,
mm-hmm,
which I think in part was because we had such a mild winter that year. Like, it really didn't get cold until after the new year. I think if it had gotten much colder, I think it might have dispersed a little bit more. But it was pretty incredible. Like, there was always some kind of story to tell, whether it was like some quirky thing that happened. Like, they opened a library there and people would come and donate books. You can go and take out books. You would get some of the unions that came out and gave water. There was always some weird angle to talk about and cover. The temperament definitely changed. At first, it was like, sure, what do you want to know? We're happy to tell you our stories. And this is my personal story and that. And then they got a little bit more, they being some of the members who were showing up. Some of them were regulars and some of them were new, but they got a lot more skeptical about some of the reporters. There were a couple that were there all the time because that was ended up being their beat, kind of like mine. And they would talk and be pretty fair, but they got a little hostile sometimes towards some of the newer reporters, or they would be a little bit more, you know, I don't know if I really want to use my name this time or whatnot. And I think, you know, personally, I was like, okay, I see where they're coming from. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the fact that, you know, there's 1% that's getting so much more of this. Like, there should be, but I don't know how to fix that. But some of them were just kids who were out there. And then you'd get a couple adults, and it would start out as one message, and then it just turned into so many others. And then it got kind of frustrating covering it. And by the time it was February and it was cold and the place was stinky and gross and dirty, and then it just ended up being like, you know, just kind of this face-off between, okay, well, who's going to flinch first between the protesters and the police? It just got like, okay, we're not even out here for a purpose. It's more just, okay, who's gonna back down first? Which, you know, there's no news in that. Then it just becomes like fodder for television.
How did you feel after it was all done? What was your takeaway from it, you think?
Personally, I'm glad that I got to cover it because it was covered across the nation. from a news standpoint, like I had amazing clips that went from the beginning to the very end. If you mean like, do I think it was like successful? Or?
Well, no, I mean, you know, you talk a little bit about some of your impressions. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, having seen the story from the very mm-hmm. beginning to the very end, you actually had a perspective of yeah. somebody who was there the whole time. How did yeah. you think it was, had changed? And
I think that it jumped the shark when the fort was built. It wasn't really even a fort. It was almost like the skeleton of a barn. And, you know, they built this thing in the park, which you can't do. And they climbed up it and there was a standoff and it was very tense. And it was like, man, what is going to happen? And I think at that point it had been, we are here because we think it is unfair, you know, big banks and government. And you could follow, anybody could kind of follow what was going on, the narrative of it. And then after that, it became, well, maybe we shouldn't have built that for it. And then all of a sudden the message kind of diluted. And I wish for them that, you know, they had been able to stay more on message, or at least been able to make narrow that message down and make it more focused. But I think it just grew too much and too broadly. And I think they lost their momentum after that, because it just went in so many different directions. You had some people who were actively like trying to overthrow, you know, urging for the overthrow of the government, while others were still trying to stay on message, while some were just there because it was free food every day from whatever shelter decided to donate to the cause from the start to really try. Like I met a guy who gave up a internship at one of the local magazines because he just didn't feel right about, you know, taking it when, you know, it was just feeding the machine, that he said. And I was like, okay, well, you're out here, more power to you. And then, but then you had someone else just going, well, you know, ranting about, you know, some conspiracy theory. And so it was too bad, I think, that they got so off message and then just ended up arguing with each other.
It's weird when you get involved in a story.
Yeah. And then it ended up, you know, instead of just being like, oh, okay, that was a respectable protest, and that, because it was feet from the White House. And then it just ended up being like trying to get gum off the bottom of your shoe. People were just so annoyed with it. People, you know, it was taking up traffic. One of my friends owns a restaurant that's right on McPherson Square. And she was like, our business, like, we almost had to close because it was so bad. Nobody could get there because they didn't want to walk through this park of like smelliness and dirt and mud. I mean, the park was also destroyed because people were living there for 4 or 5 months. So the grass had been trampled. The flowers were gone. They had to repolish everything because people had, they had just taken it over, and they'd also kind of abused it, and which, you know, wasn't respectful either.
Yeah, it's amazing how these stories sort of unravel.
Yeah,
and then when it's over, you kind of wonder what was gained.
Yeah, yeah.
And what
I remember, like a couple months later, it was like a year later or so, they tried to do like a march on Capitol Hill again, and it was just like this husk of itself. There was, you know, barely anybody who was marching. They had like this lone drum, and it was just very. A totally different experience than what it was a year ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, on that downer of a note.
On that joyous tone.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And maybe we can have you on again sometime to talk about things. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and now Google Play. This week's podcast was produced by Nicola Grisco, web editor Amber Healy, and me, your host, Michael O'Connell. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.